Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Our members continue to advocate for increased funding and higher payment rates to better reflect the true cost of implementing and maintaining conservation practices.
President of the Texas Farm Bureau, Russell Bainey.
Simplifying application processes and reducing paperwork are top priorities, especially for small and beginning farmers who may lack the time or resources to navigate these complex requirements. Farmers seek more flexibility in program contracts and practice options to tailor the conservation their conservation efforts to their unique operations. We ask members of this subcommittee to work towards reauthorizing the Farm Bill to ensure that farmers have access to conservation programs that promote environmental stewardship.
This is Agriculture Today.
Crude oil prices have been falling to two-week lows following news of a ceasefire between Israel and Iran. Now, that deal announced by President Trump eased tensions that had driven up market risk. Analysts say the move erased most of the geopolitical premium built into oil prices over the last couple of weeks. Senate leaders moving forward with a revised plan to have states help cover the cost of SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. The proposal ties state contributions to their program error rates, which totaled $10 billion in 2023. Starting in 2029, a three-year average would determine each state's share. Senate Ag Committee Chairman John Bozeman says it's a step toward more accountability as lawmakers look to save more than $200 billion in the upcoming reconciliation bill. Your 4th of July cookout, about the same as last year, $709 per person. That's according to the American Farm Bureau Federation. While items like ground beef and potato salad are up, prices falling for pork chops, chips, and buns. Cost remains, though, the second highest since the survey began in 2013. NCBA says the spread of New World screwworm is moving rapidly north and prevention is critical. One fly production facility is already operating in Panama. New sites in development in both Mexico and Texas. And federal wildfire officials have raised the national preparedness level to 3. It signals more support for states heading into peak fire season. Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins says the administration has built the world's most coordinated wildfire response, with the Forest Service already seeing 96% staffing levels. USDA out with the cold storage report on Wednesday. Total red meat supplies in freezers down 2% from the previous month, down 4% year over year. Total pounds of beef in freezers down 3% from the previous month, down 1% from last year. Frozen pork supplies down 1% from the previous month, 7% lower than last year. And stocks of pork bellies down 7% from last month, 26% lower than last year.
Policy changes continue to evolve, and their effects on the economy remain uncertain. The effects of tariffs will depend, among other things, on their ultimate level. Expectations of that level, and thus of the related economic effects, reached a peak in April and have since declined.
Testifying recently before Congress, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell.
Even so, increases in tariffs this year are likely to push up prices and weigh on economic activity. The effects on inflation could be short-lived, reflecting a one-time shift in the price level. It's also possible that the inflationary effects could instead be more persistent. Avoiding that would depend on the size of the tariff effects, on how long it takes for them to pass through fully into prices, and ultimately on keeping longer-term inflation expectations well anchored. Our obligation is to keep longer-term inflation expectations well anchored and to prevent a one-time increase in the price level from becoming an ongoing inflation problem. As we act to meet that obligation, we will balance our maximum employment and price stability mandates, keeping in mind that without price stability, we cannot achieve the long periods of strong labor market conditions that benefit all Americans. For the time being, we are well positioned to wait to learn more about the likely course of the economy before considering any adjustments to our policy stance.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The roots of our conservation system date back to the 1930s and the actions that the federal government took in response to the Dust Bowl.
Former chairman of the House Ag Committee from Oklahoma, Frank Lucas.
In the 19th century, the Homestead Act was enacted with the best of intentions. But it had unintended consequences. When settlers came west in search of fertile land to farm, it didn't take long for them to realize that the sandy soils in the southern Great Plains were susceptible to erosion when unprotected, or not protected, I should say, by native vegetation. Coupled with severe drought conditions, this led to massive dust storms in Oklahoma, Texas, and Kansas in the 1930s. Perhaps the worst fell on April 14, 1935, the day that has become known as Black Sunday. The dust storms were so severe, their effects were felt far beyond the southern Great Plains, gathering attention of lawmakers in Washington. Only 13 days after Black Sunday, President Roosevelt signed legislation into law establishing the then-named Soil Conservation Service. Renamed the Natural Resources Conservation Service in 1996, the agency administers most of the Farm Bill conservation programs and provides technical assistance for others administered by the Farm Service Agency. Voluntary conservation practices are critically important for supporting agriculture and ensuring we don't have another Dust Bowl again. With this year marking the 90th anniversary of both Black Sunday and the establishment of the now-named NRCS, today's hearing is timely to hear more about these programs and how Congress may be able to further improve them. We are currently in the second extension of the 2018 Farm Bill, and rural America badly needs legislation to reflect the current status of agriculture and the rural economy. This extends to conservation programs and reforms we can include to build on the progress we've made in recent farm bills. Last year's committee passed farm bill proposed historic new funding for conservation programs by rescinding the unobligated Inflation Reduction Act funding and reinvesting it in Title II. The House passed reconciliation bill similarly reinvests the unobligated IRA funding into the conservation title. Reallocating those dollars would increase the title's baseline over the long term, making it a permanent investment in conservation programs. It also allows for continued support for orphan programs, increased funding for successful programs like Small Watershed Program, and the creation of new forestry easement program. In addition to funding, last year's bill placed an emphasis on science, technology, and innovation. The bill makes precision agriculture specifically eligible for cost share under EQIP and CSP, requires more frequent updates to conservation practice standards, and creates an Office of Innovation at the Office of the Secretary. The bill streamlines RCPP, provides common sense flexibility for ACEP, and reforms the Technical Service Provider Program. The bill also proposes a modernization of CRP and focusing the program on marginal lands by incorporating soil capacity class into rental rates for general enrollment. These are all welcome changes intended to improve program administration and make them more producer-friendly. Farm Bill conservation programs have been so successful because they are voluntary, incentive-based, and producer-first. The programs have also been so effective because they are locally led, which allows for states and regions to determine the priority natural resource concerns. As we think about the next Farm Bill, it's important for us to keep all of this in mind. Conservation programs have been so effective because the flexibility built into them and because we have continually encouraged the local-led process to work. I'm proud of the work that this committee has done over the past several Farm Bill cycles to improve the programs because we know voluntary conservation works.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I'll start with the fact that it was extremely global. So we saw there literally was a point at which not a single country in the world had inflation 2% or below. So it was everywhere.
Testifying before the House Financial Services Committee, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell answering questions from Florida Representative Mike Haridopoulos.
So you have to look to common factors. And I would say that the pandemic and the closing of the global economy and then the reopening of it, in all cases with some support, that's a big part of the story. Clearly, though, there's a role in that for fiscal policy. There's a role in that for monetary policy. I like to think all of those factors were involved. You know, when it happens everywhere in the world, you can't look to one thing. You got to look to something, a common factor. And I think that common factor is what happened around the pandemic.
And build on that idea, I hate it, Monday morning quarterback, but if you had to do it over again, what would you do differently today if you had the opportunity to look back and make some changes?
I have perfect hindsight in this.
Yes, sir, if you had it, yeah.
Sure. So I would have raised rates a little earlier. I honestly don't believe it would have made much difference to the outcomes, but we would have looked a lot smarter. But that's something I would have done. The other thing is, you know, ultimately, we did get all the way back to full to 2% inflation just about without having a big increase in employment. So that was not at all expected. So I don't know how that would have affected my behavior, but somehow things really came out much better than everyone had anticipated. Was that it would take, you know, high unemployment to restore inflation, but it didn't.
And the other pressure point that I hear a lot of people talking about is this idea of the tariff issue. I've heard for months now that the sky is falling, but it seems at this point, at least, that the inflation rate is pretty steady. And how many months of steadiness do you need before you might look at an even larger rate cut from the 4.33 I think we have today?
Yeah, so you're right. Inflation, the non-tariff parts of inflation that we've been working on for 3-4 years are behaving really well. And that was our forecast, but it's good to see it coming true. I would say we expected that tariffs take a while to work their way through the distribution chain, several months. And I would say we would expect to see meaningful effects, you know, kind of June, July, August. And if we don't, you know, we'll be learning something. We have a highly adaptive, flexible economy, and it's certainly a possibility that the tariffs that we expect will come through in a much smaller level. We can't know that until we actually see it. But I think we'll be learning as we go, and if we see that, then that would lead us to want to cut earlier. The other thing that would lead us to want to cut earlier is if we actually did see some weakness in the labor market of a troubling nature. We don't see that. Those are the two things we'll be looking for.
But at the same time, there's pretty radical increase in spending in 2021 by the federal government. What factor did that play in the inflation level?
Certainly a factor, I would say. As I mentioned, fiscal policy definitely played a role. I think if you take a step back from those things, what happened was demand came back so much stronger than we expected. You remember, if in late 21, early 22, you had the pandemic still going on, Omicron going, was it 21 into 22, and demand was just much stronger than people expected. And by the way, the supply side was much slower to recover. So that's the labor force, that's all of the snarled up supply chains. The supply side took a long time to recover, and demand was much stronger. That story created the high inflation. Behind that, fiscal policy played a role, the spending did, monetary policy played a role, and the pandemic.
But you would agree that the government spending did play a significant role in that as well?
Yeah, I would say that.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
The Federal Reserve remains squarely focused on achieving our dual mandate goals of maximum employment and stable prices for the benefit of the American people.
Testifying before the House Financial Committee, Jerome Powell, chairman of the Federal Reserve, presenting the Fed's semi-annual monetary policy report.
Despite elevated uncertainty, the economy is in a solid position. The unemployment rate remains low, and the labor market is at or near maximum employment. Inflation has come down a great deal, but has been running somewhat above our 2% longer-run objective. We are attentive to the risks on both sides of our dual mandate. I will review the current economic situation before turning to monetary policy. Incoming data suggests that the economy remains solid. Following growth of 2.5% last year, GDP was reported to have edged down in the first quarter, reflecting swings in net exports that were driven by businesses bringing in imports ahead of potential tariffs. This unusual swing has complicated GDP measurement. Private domestic final purchases, or PDFP, which excludes net exports, inventory investment, and government spending, grew at a solid 2.5% rate. Within PDFP, growth of consumer spending moderated, while investment in equipment and intangibles rebounded from weakness in the fourth quarter. Surveys of households and businesses, however, report a decline in sentiment in recent months and elevated uncertainty about the economic outlook, largely reflecting trade policy concerns. It remains to be seen how these developments might affect future spending and investment. In the labor market, conditions have remained solid. Payroll job gains averaged a moderate 224,000 per month in the first 5 months of the year. The unemployment rate at 4.2% in May remains low and has stayed in a narrow range for the past year. Wage growth has continued to moderate while still outpacing inflation. Overall, a wide set of indicators suggests that conditions in the labor market are broadly in balance and consistent with maximum employment. The labor market is not a source of significant inflationary pressures. The strong labor market conditions in recent years have helped narrow longstanding disparities in employment and earnings across demographic groups. Inflation has eased significantly from its highs in mid-2022, but remains somewhat elevated relative to our 2% longer-run goal. Estimates based on the Consumer Price Index and other data indicate that total personal consumption expenditures, or PCE, prices rose 2.3% over the 12 months ending in May, and that, excluding the volatile food and energy categories, core PCE prices rose 2.6%. Near-term measures of inflation expectations have moved up over recent months, as reflected in both market and survey-based measures. Respondents to surveys of consumers, businesses, and professional forecasters point to tariffs as the driving factor. Beyond the next year or so, however, most measures of longer-term expectations remain consistent with our 2% inflation goal. Our monetary policy actions are guided by our dual mandate to promote maximum employment and stable prices for the American people. With the labor market at or near maximum employment and inflation remaining somewhat elevated, the Federal Open Market Committee has maintained the target range for the federal funds rate at 4.25% to 4.5% since the beginning of the year. We've also continued to reduce our holdings of Treasury and agency mortgage-backed securities, and beginning in April, further slowed the pace of this decline to facilitate a smooth transition to ample reserve balances. We will continue to determine the appropriate stance of monetary policy based on the incoming data, the evolving outlook, and the balance of risks.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Thank you for holding this hearing and for the opportunity to testify on the importance of voluntary, locally led, incentive-based Farm Bill conservation programs.
Testifying recently before a House Ag Subcommittee on Conservation Research and Biotechnology, Chris McLeland with Ducks Unlimited.
I'm the Managing Director of Agriculture Programs for Ducks Unlimited in the Great Lakes Atlantic region, and I'm also a producer myself, supporting a small cow-calf operation in my home state of Missouri. It's an honor to be here this morning. As a proud partner of USDA, Ducks Unlimited has a long history of working with farmers, ranchers, and other private landowners across the country to restore and enhance millions of acres of waterfowl habitat. Ducks Unlimited supports balanced agricultural policies that help American farmers and ranchers be more competitive and successful in meeting the demands for food, fiber, and energy while conserving soil, water, wetlands, grasslands, and forests. DU's focus is not just on the financial assistance dollars delivered to agricultural producers and land stewards, but also the critical importance of conservation technical assistance, where partners such as Ducks Unlimited work alongside USDA and participating landowners to help them achieve their conservation goals. We're proud of our ability to deliver quality, science-based assistance with agricultural producers alongside NRCS. The Federal Flagship Wetlands Restoration Program, ASEP, Wetlands Reserve Easement, or WRE, is a voluntary, non-regulatory, incentive-based way for private landowners, farmers, and ranchers to protect and restore wetlands on their property. WRE also provides landowners a financially viable alternative for transitioning farmland with high inputs and low profits to functioning wetlands while continuing to focus investments and production on more suitable lands. And I've personally witnessed these benefits and the positive impacts WRE has to these program participants. NRCS also works with landowners to implement conservation practices on older WREs, allowing these lands to continue to provide ecosystem services for wildlife and people. One of DU's biggest priorities in the next Farm Bill is to ensure NRCS provides landowners with long-term stewardship opportunities. It is critically important that the program provide these additional tools to landowners to maintain their WRE and retain the associated wildlife benefits. Mr. Lucas, as you know, the Regional Conservation Partnership Program, which was originally authorized while you were chair of the committee, has been a resounding success. The rice industry's symbiotic relationship with waterfowl led DU to a historic partnership with USA Rice. This partnership has had phenomenal success in delivering on-the-ground conservation to rice farmers with more than 800,000 acres of rice impacted and over $100 million of additional conservation funding directed to these program participants. And while there still are administrative hurdles with the program, Ducks Unlimited asked Congress to provide thoughtful and targeted solutions that allow the program to continue to succeed. The Conservation Reserve Program, CRP, provides farmers and ranchers with additional financial options while improving soil health, enhancing water quality, and supporting wildlife habitat. And we do thank FSA and Administrator Beam for recently opening CRP general and continuous enrollments, and appreciate the committee's efforts in addressing policies last Congress that promote locally led activities and reinstate management tools and options such as mid-contract management, as well as increasing the rental rate payment practices under continuous CRP and state acres for wildlife enhancement.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We agree with what the President Trump is doing, or what the administration is doing in deporting illegals, criminal illegals. We do not want to enter agua. We don't really want people who have committed any type of crime, even more if they are illegals.
At a recent House Financial Services Committee hearing, Representative Maria Salazar from Florida with the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell.
But we do know that, unfortunately, what's happening right now after 6 months of being Mr. President being in office, that we're losing thousands and thousands of workers, what the ICE leadership has called collateral damage. And most of those people are working in three main sectors, construction, hospitality, and agriculture. Even the president said the other day in a tweet that he understands that that those hands are needed. We're talking about 15% of the economy, construction, hospitality, and agriculture. So my question to you is, what is the growth effect on the economy if this type of removal of people, of hands being removed from those three main top sectors?
Immigration is another area where nobody put us in charge. We're not, you know, Congressional Budget Office and other agencies can make assessments like that. We do have a role to maximize employment, but we take immigration policy as just, we take it as it comes. What it's obviously done is it's really reduced the amount of growth in the labor force. And so, at the same time, demand for workers has been coming down as well.
Reduce the growth. Why don't we talk a little bit more? Because we want to continue growing. We're the number one economy in the world. We need to continue growing. So you're saying that what's affecting the growth?
Well, there are two things that affect growth. One is growth in the labor force, more people working. And the other thing is productivity. How much do they produce per hour worked? And when you significantly slow the growth of the labor force, you will slow the growth of the economy. But I think, again, it's not for us to have a view on immigration policy.
I understand. It was that. Just my comments, but you do agree that if we don't have those hands, then we don't grow.
I think that growth will slow and actually is slowing this year, and that's one of the reasons.
Well, we don't like that. So now let's talk about the next 10 years, 2025 to 2035. Americans are not having enough kids, so that means that we need other people, right? So over the next decade, based on the current trends that I just explained to you and that you just reiterated, will there be enough workers to fulfill the labor needs of our economy between 2025 and 2035?
So I think labor economists do observe the phenomenon you're talking about, which is demand for labor going to be met by the domestic population, the native-born population? And the answer appears to be probably not over the next 10 years.
And then what about if we do not have that labor force over the next 10 years, what happens?
So many things will happen. You can see a big increase in productivity, which would mean we don't need as many workers. For example, artificial intelligence could be implemented in a way that creates widespread productivity gains. I wouldn't count on that, but it's a possibility.
You would not?
No, I mean, I think there will be gains because with productivity enhancing things, they typically take longer to be implemented. And then it takes a while for the gains to be shown. I think in the case of artificial intelligence, those gains are coming, but they may take longer or be less in the beginning than expected.
And during the time that those changes happen, then what happens? Our economy doesn't grow. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, but I mean, those who make immigration policy are entitled to weigh these factors. You know,
no,
we can report on what happens, but it's really not our job.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
I've discussed our partnership with NRCS in providing conservation technical assistance when delivering these programs. This assistance, which is directly provided to the agricultural producers, is essential to the long-term success of a producer's conservation system. Conservation technical assistance is just as important as the financial assistance provided through the suite of Farm Bill programs.
Missouri cattleman Chris McLeland with Ducks Unlimited.
The priorities mentioned in my testimony were included in the Farm, Food, and National Security Act that passed out of the House Agricultural Committee last Congress, and I thank Chairman Thompson and the members of the committee for supporting Ducks Unlimited's priorities last Congress, and we ask you to continue to support those provisions in the upcoming Farm Bill. Ducks Unlimited proudly partners with NRCS and passionate farmers and ranchers and landowners who invest their own financial resources to bring these Farm Bill programs to their lands, and DU's mission to conserve, restore, and maintain wetlands and waterfowl habitat would not be possible without these voluntary programs.